R-E-L-I-S-H-A.
Welcome back to Finding Relisha. Last time we talked about the abundance of missing people in D.C. in the early years of Relisha's life. This episode is going to be a little bit different. It's more so about the history of the last place Relisha would ever call home, or at least would ever be her home, because I don't think she ever quite referred to it as that. I think it's important to tell you all the history of the place that Relisha called the Trap House. The hospital turned homeless shelter was founded as the Washington Infirmary in 1806, using a $2,000 grant from Congress, and it was located at 6th and M Street Northwest. Originally in the Judiciary Square, it moved to 19th and Massachusetts Southeast in 1846. At the turn of the century, efforts to help open a new public hospital at 14th and Upshur were opposed by residents. The final hospital site was developed in the 1840s as a consolidated hospital, corps, house, and workhouse complex known as the Washington Asylum Hospital. It was then renamed Gallagher Municipal Hospital in 1922, after U.S. Senator Jacob Harold Gallagher. The D.C. General we all know now is situated in the city's depressed southeast section at the end of a forlorn stretch of Massachusetts Avenue, a street that, in the prosperous northwest area, is home to the elegant mansions of Embassy Row. The hospital is a collection of mostly aging brick sprawling over about 68 acres of a riverfront site that includes the city morgue and the jail. At its peak, after World War II, D.C. General had enough patients to fill 1,600 beds. Throughout its 188-year existence, the institution has provided de facto universal health care to residents of the district, or at least has tried to. Typically, only people with no other alternative have taken advantage of its services, but it has always seemed inadequate to this colossal mission. At various times, it's flirted with both bankruptcy and excommunication from the respectable medical community. It became well known that the hospital was hanging on by a financial thread, crippled by massive operating deficits. And what was widely less recognized is that it was struggling medically as well, having only one summer survived a threat to its accreditation under the Medicaid and Medicare programs, its largest source of revenue by far. At the same time, it manages to be both expensive and, in some areas, only marginally competent. Even before the hospital was turned into a homeless shelter, it was functional at best. There were reports from a summer in June when patients were complaining of emergency room waits as long as 7 hours. And I'm not just talking about like for sprained ankles. I'm talking about like serious stuff, like abdominal pain accompanied by vomiting, like things you really need to be seen now for, like don't pass go, don't collect $200, like get me into the ER room now, that kind of stuff. Then, to make matters worse, a botched delivery at DC General resulted in a $3.1 million jury verdict against the city. And the hospital's death rate for Medicare patients? The horror stories of old are almost never ending, it seems. If you research up on the place, you'll find out that in 1951, a man who was in his 50s died in the waiting room where he had been sitting for 8 hours waiting for help. But on the other hand, it's a miracle that DC General treated these people at all. Most of the people they treated had no other option. If DC General didn't treat them, nobody else would. It was unique among district hospitals. DC General pledged to treat all residents of the district, regardless of their ability to pay, and it did just that. Sometimes, when I sit here and think about this place and its history and the tragedy it's seen and the turmoil and the grief and the strife, I can only imagine the thoughts little Relisha must have had as she was riding in the car up to this shelter. The drive would take her east on Massachusetts Avenue and eventually deliver her to the hospital's gate. To the right loomed the twin squat towers of DC Jail, their mean windows surveying the hospital's always full parking lots. To the left, off in the distance, are the armory and the RFK Stadium. In front of you now sprawls the jumbled mass of brick that is DC General. I am telling you this, all of this, the history of this place, because I want you to realize what type of place these children and families are put into. Hospitals are creepy on a good day. I can't imagine being stuck in one, especially this one, where buildings seem to blend into each other and spread out in every possible direction. It's not always easy to tell where one structure ends and its neighboring structure begins. DC General was actually comprised of 9 buildings. In the beginning, from the brand new ambulatory and critical care center, which would house the emergency room and intensive care units, to its utterly decrepit Archibald Hall, a relic of the 20s. Archibald Hall was once a state-of-the-art hospital facility, and now it contains only a few administrative offices. The roof leaks incessantly, and not a single window appears to hang straight in its frame, but this is now a new home to you. Welcome home. If you can believe it, once inside the hospital-turned-shelter, it became increasingly more eerie. Once you walk through those big, heavy doors, the corridors seemed to stretch beyond into the horizon, and tunnels seemed to just descend into the center of the earth. And eventually these tunnels would lead to where the kitchen was shrouded in clouds of steam. But in its heyday, right where you were standing, residents and nurses would hurry from room to room, dodging patients on stretchers and orderlies, pushing carts loaded with disused-looking and inexplicable medical equipment. Quite a few people would even seem to be missing limbs or digits at this point in time. And they would just be out in the hallway, in pain, in front of everyone. And then, there were the ones that everyone kept a safe distance from, the patients under police guard. All of this is right there where your two little feet are standing, where you have to go because there's nowhere else for you and your mom and your brothers. Once inside this labyrinth, you can find clinics and facilities of every imaginable sort. At one point, 2 pharmacies handed out free prescription drugs. There's a physical rehabilitation ward, a cardiac catheterization lab, a urinalysis lab, and a radiology lab. There's an outpatient clinic run by Howard University, and another staffed by Georgetown University postgraduates, plus a dental clinic. There are 5 intensive care units and no fewer than 3 emergency rooms, pediatric, obstetric, and general, 1 for each. And then one entire building is devoted to pediatrics. In another building, a wing of the floor is given to detox and substance abuse treatment, where recovering addicts spend their time making bas relief paintings from plaster of Paris. This is the reality of the history of the place that you now are supposed to call home. How do you wrap your mind around this at 8 years old? I mean, you probably don't at 8 years old, but you can still tell something is off. Something's not quite right. You don't get good feelings from this place. But while on its way to becoming that same shelter Alicia would go into, at this point, it's still a hospital. Then, one day, federal officials decided to put the city's first and only public hospital out of business. But business continued as usual. A woman, usually pregnant and a week past her due date, received an ultrasound examination in the sweltering heat. The still air moved about by a fan because the air conditioning had not yet been turned on. On the maternity ward, a 14-year-old girl gave birth in a room of peeling wallpaper and cracked paint. The baby she gave birth to swallowed its own stool during delivery and was rushed into the neonatal intensive care unit for oxygen. On the cancer ward, a nurse made her rounds with dollar bills stuffed in her pockets. She never knew when a patient might need bus fare home. This is the reality of what this place was becoming. Since its founding as an almshouse nearly two centuries ago, DC General has embraced the city's sick and poor, most of them African Americans, when there was nowhere else for them to go. This hospital has trained generations of Black doctors, many committed to serving the underserved. But the hospital has also been sorely mismanaged at this point. It was so mismanaged and unkempt that 2 years before Relisha and her family would take up residence there, the first of many scandals broke loose to the public. Among the vacant suites of DC General lay a former autopsy suite. One day, a 40-year-old photographer found possible human remains at the DC General complex, a find which was even confirmed by the DC police. The underground photographer likes to explore abandoned buildings, dark, decrepit places, such as the old pathology office on the edge of the campus that once housed DC General Hospital. Through an unlocked door, he crept in, flashlight in hand, camera around his neck, down a hallway, into an office. And that was where he made a discovery that has since sent shivers to the highest reaches of the district's police department. Inside a container, beneath the label, read, quote, babies that have been autopsied. The photographer saw what he is convinced are the remains of a young human life. The abandoned box, in fact, contained remains of a human baby, described by the photographer as even having fingernails, hair, eyelashes, and everything. DC General was now a crime scene, and police were called in. After speaking to and texting with photographer, Police Chief Kathy L. Lanier dispatched a search team, which found what he had discovered. The DC police released a statement saying, quote, we recovered what appears to be remains, possibly that of a fetus, end quote. As a mother, I have trouble wrapping my mind around this. It's a baby. It has fingernails, hair, eyelashes, everything. It's a baby that was left there in a box, like a discarded piece of trash. The police chief, Kathy Lanier, then ordered the remains transported to the DC Medical Examiner's office to have an autopsy performed. When she addressed the public, she did tell them that it could take some time to get a final ruling, but that it did not appear to be a crime, although it was very, very sad. As demeaning to human rights as this is, it wasn't the last find. The photographer who made the find is part of an informal group that, as a hobby, explores abandoned government and private buildings. This group takes photographs and shares them online to pay homage to historically significant sites and architecture. What drew him to the DC General campus, which once housed a large morgue, is its cultural and historical significance, according to the photographer. The hospital was shut down in 2001. After researching which buildings on the campus were still vacant, he drove to what he believed was once the pathology building, a three-story brick structure south of RFK Stadium and the DC Armory. The DC General campus is now home to the Medical Examiner's Office, a homeless shelter and clinics for substance abusers and people with sexually transmitted diseases. A sign taped near one of the entrances of the old pathology buildings reads, "Funeral Directors Only." Another sign reads, "Laboratory Entrance." The photographer, just like the one before him, entered through a door that was ajar. Then he walked into what he called the autopsy suite, a warren of offices on the ground floor. Here he found files and documents that had been left behind, apparently after the hospital's closure. He also found two white containers. Inside one of the containers, the photographer saw what he thought looked like a placenta. Inside the other, he saw the remains, wrapped in moist brown paper from what appeared to be the shoulders down. He said there seemed to be a cut in the scalp through which the skull could be seen. The photographer immediately closed the container and left the building, shutting the door behind him. But he felt a moral obligation to ensure that the remains received a proper burial. But he was not sure of whom to call. Much like myself, this photographer had kids. He saw them being born and what they looked like. And that's what this baby with the split head looked like. and it was just in a container. Again, the photographer said of this find that, quote, "This was left behind by someone employed by the DC government, and I'm expected to contact the same people to make sure it's laid to rest correctly," end quote. Once again, it was Police Chief Kathy Lanier that spoke directly to the photographer, who provided more detailed directions, and the containers were found not long after. Chief Lanier said that her investigators will need to determine when the pathology building was vacated and who was responsible for removing stuff. And this time around, it was going to be a longer investigation. Yet, this place is still deemed livable for families, let alone families with children. This General Hospital story itself is kind of a soap opera, where crises are every day, but nothing ever changes. The city then chose to take a place filled with strife, grief, and negative energy and turn it into what was supposed to be a place of refuge. Earlier, I told you guys that I was explaining the entire history that I could find on this place to you guys so that you can get a sense of the vibes that this place might put off and how it would look. And right now, I want to paint a very, very bleak picture of the place where Relisha lived. If you can, close your eyes. Imagine you are 8 years old and you're driving up to this expansive circular driveway towards a building. This building is the shelter in which Relisha lived. And for all intents and purposes, in this moment, it's the shelter where you will live. To one side of it, there's a building, and that building is the former morgue. And on the other side is a methadone clinic. For those of you who don't know, a methadone clinic is a place where those struggling with opioid addiction can go to get help. Now, imagine, for a second, you are that little girl. On one side of the place you live is a building that used to house the dead. And on the other side is a place where addicts can go to get clean, which is not an easy task. And it's often definitely not a pretty task either. And it has some very ugly side effects. But yet you're exposed to all of this. And as if this doesn't seem like a bad enough combination, across the circular drive from where Relisha lived, from where you're living in the second, was the jail, surrounded by barbed wire fencing. I don't know about you, but this is not the place I imagine a shelter being. But it's still a roof over your head. You're 8 years old, and you have nowhere else to go, so you deal. After going around the circular drive, you get out of the car at a rundown brick building. This is the same building that was once the former DC General Hospital. Windows that have gone missing for whatever reason aren't replaced. They're just boarded over with wood. Rooms that families live in are nothing more than old patient rooms, with the size of the family's room depending upon the size of the family. These old patient rooms with all these old stories and all of this history is now where you have to go lay your head at night. Regardless of the bleak conditions, the shelter tried to make the former hospital a good place for families, putting in place a rule system to keep children safe and families together. Some of the rules the shelter had in place to protect children were that children could only leave the facility with a parent, and a parent could only bring a child into the facility. In addition to that, in order to get into the shelter, an ID check and a security check was put in place. This seems like a great start in all honesty. The shelter went so far as to only allow shelter employees to let families into their own rooms. No room keys could be made or distributed to anyone who should not have them. And this seemed like a really solid plan. On top of the security measures, the shelter also assigned one case manager to each family to help them to try and get into housing and a better living situation. Regardless of everything put into place by the shelter, this type of existence is not easy, nor is it for the faint of heart. Among all of the security measures to get inside the place you call home, you are surrounded by all of these rundown buildings that are used or were used for things that children should be sheltered from, not beside. Yet 1900 Massachusetts Avenue, Southeast Washington, D.C., otherwise known as the old D.C. General, was now Relisha's home. Can you imagine? Sometimes I often wonder how she must have felt. How she felt living here. The first few years were kind of uneventful. And then at the point where things start getting a little sketchy, Relisha had been living in the D.C. hospital turned homeless shelter for 2 whole years. So she moved in 2012 and everything started going awry in early 2014. So she endured this place for 2 whole years. Even though, yes, she was in a shelter, she made the best of it. She enjoyed dancing. She liked playing and going to arts and crafts time. With a place having such a history as this one, I wondered what the living conditions actually were during the time Relisha was there. And her grandmother actually helped shed some light on this subject for me.
The living condition wasn't up to par. It was not. It was not sanitary at all. They done had an issue with bed bugs over there. I had an issue with scabies over there. The food, you know, the for them to have security, for them to be having to do like room check and stuff, they didn't do their check like they supposed to. If you know I got 4 kids, you just me and my baby father and 3 of my kids, you're gonna be wanting to know where's my 4th child at, right?
Yeah.
Something that they never did. They would come and knock on the door and just say, room check. Miss Young is all of your kids. You can tell them anything. Yeah, my kids are sleeping. They never come in and check. That's how Relisha got slipped through in the shelter. That's how she got mixed.
Okay.
They wasn't doing the job right. They was too busy doing other things.
It was said that Relisha referred to the shelter as the trap house, and she never wanted to stay there.
You know, so, but she, you know, listen, she's very outspoken. She would tell you what's on her mind. You know, if she was here right now and you were to ask her to tell you something about the shelter, she would look at you and say, oh, you talking about the trap house? Yeah, that's what she would call it, the trap house. Because of all the drugs that was being sold, you know, you had the... I'm going to say the addicts, that's an appropriate word, the addicts, you know, whether they was on heroin or whatever type, but they would come over there and sell their little pills and, you know, little stuff like that, you know.
At the shelter?
You know, yeah, right out there at the bus stop, right there. Because D.C. General Shelter used to be the old D.C. General Hospital here in D.C. Once they closed the hospital, they converted it to a shelter. But see, prior to Lisha going missing, we didn't know about another child that had went missing from that very shelter before Lisha went missing. We heard about that while they was looking for my granddaughter. And see, had we had known about that, I wouldn't allow my daughter to go into that shelter. But you see how they kept it hush-hush. The living conditions there was... Relisha, by her being homeless, prior to going into the shelter, we all stayed with my daughter Ashley. And she wasn't supposed to be in the shelter. The reason why she went into the shelter is because Ashley had told Relisha's stepdad, my oldest daughter's other baby father, since he wanted to be violence, wanted to fight and everything, he could no longer reside in her home. Mika left and took her kids to the shelter. That's how they became into the shelter.
Okay.
So once they got into the shelter, me personally, I wasn't happy about them being there.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't tell Shamika nothing.
For nearly 2 years, Relisha had been living in the homeless shelter with other homeless families in the former hospital, which was a grim place with bed bugs and no playground.
All kids need a place to play.
Relatives have said that the second grader who slept with a teddy bear she named Baby wanted out so desperately that she would fake asthma attacks to stay at their homes. Adults who were close to her at her old school described how Relisha never wanted to leave school. She would beg to stay late, even when there was nothing going on, just because she didn't want to go back to the trap house. Depending on who you talk to, some will say DC General was doomed from the beginning, almost cursed, if you will. To others, it was a beacon of hope, regardless of the state of despair it lay in. To some, it was an eyesore, but to others, it was home. Next time on Finding Relisha. This past episode, you learned all about the environment Relisha lived in and its less than savory history. Next week, you're going to hear all about Relisha's life here at the shelter and how she was introduced to the last person who would ever see her alive. If you have any information on Relisha at all, or even think that there is a possibility that you might, please reach out to us. Call Metro PD at 202-727-9099, or you can send a text to the anonymous line at 50411. You may also contact the FBI at 1-800-CALL-FBI. You may also dial 1-800-THE-LOST. If you do not wish to contact law enforcement directly, please reach out by dialing non-law enforcement at 202-491-2327.